Never get over being nervous. I'm very ill prepared tonight. I'm going to kind of wing it. Of course, I always wing it. Not sure where to start. I wish I had a good joke to open up with, but I don't. I just don't. I do know that good ideas can be expressed very well without profanity, so I will not use, and I won't say any, but I will try not to run anybody out of here with profanity. I'm not going to qualify. I have more addictions than alcohol, but Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. My sobriety date is February 20th, 1990. I'm not sure of my sponsor's sobriety date. I'm on my fourth sponsor. None of them have gone back out, but three of them have died. So, I would like to welcome the new person here. Erica, is that right? Glad you're here. Is this your very first AA meeting? Okay. Okay. Well, we're glad you're here. I'll tell you a little bit about me, I guess. That's why I'm up here, right? I was born and raised here. There was five kids in the family. We're all a year apart, so obviously my parents didn't have much time for about 5 years there to do much of anything. My mother did. My dad was fine, but you know how that goes. My mother was a nurse. She went to nursing school at Georgia Baptist Hospital. My dad was in the parts business for a long time. Genuine Parts. Used to be Genuine Parts in Napa now. So that's a native company. I grew up in the South DeKalb area. Went to public high school, public elementary school, public kindergarten. We were poor in finances, but rich in heart. I guess you could say. We were poor. Five kids, and dad was the only one. Well, both of them were working, but five kids is a pretty big load for a young couple. I had a lot of fun as a kid. I guess I can share a little bit. I had some health issues as a child. It really affected my. The way I fit right into drinking. It made it. I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but I had some physical issues that really had a lot to do with why I drank the way I drank. A lot to do, not all, but a lot to do. I had allergies as a kid. I had asthma as a kid. I had a real codependent mom who was a nurse, so she just loved having a sick kid. And I don't mean that in sarcasm. That's the way it kind of fit in. If you know anything about codependency, you kind of understand that a little bit. But anyway, I was treated different. It's kind of where I'm getting at. I was treated special. You know, I couldn't play out in hay fields. You know, I couldn't do certain things. I'd have asthma attack, and I'd have to be inside and protected. I had some real bad skin issues. I was allergic to foods, environmental allergies. I'd break out in rashes. It was a continuous pain in the ass for me. And at the time I was growing up, there was no understanding of allergies. And it's funny, you know, our disease is an allergy. At least that's the good way to describe it. You know, if you, most people, if they're allergic to strawberries, you know, they're not going to go and go out of their way 50 miles to go get a basket of strawberries because they know if they eat them, they might end up in the hospital. But, you know, with the alcoholic, you know, I go 50 miles, even though I might not make it back for 4 days, I'll go 50 miles to get a bottle of liquor, so six-pack case of beer. I go to Florida to get a case of beer just because it's cheaper. I mean, I dealt with a lot of physical issues growing up, And I just bring those up because it affected me before I started drinking. It affected the way I felt about myself. It affected my self-esteem. It affected fear issues. You know, it affected my personality. So that when I did find alcohol, I had a cure for those deficiencies. Two older brothers, younger sister, and a younger brother. And we all pretty much raised ourselves. Had a mother worked at night, dad worked at daytime. They were just working all the time. So, you know, who's home watching the kids? Well, big brother's watching. And he's only watching the next biggest brother. And then he's only watching, you know, because you pass that, you delegate that authority down, you know. And so I end up nobody's watching anybody. And, you know, whenever something goes wrong, he did it, she did it, he did it. Nobody's able to tell the truth. And it's really nonstop action is what it is. You know, learned to lie real good. I guess that's where I'm going. I learned to lie real well. So there was a lot of stuff going on before I took my first drink. And I do remember taking my first drink. Was a swig of Pabst Blue Ribbon. Yeah, good old PBR, man. And I hated it. I hated every bit of it. But it was just a challenge to me from my older brother and my dad. You know, it was, you know, let Terry try it. See if he can drink. I mean, you know, it was that kind of that John Wayne attitude thing. So anyway, I took a big old swig and just, you know, God, it was awful. It's the worst tasting stuff I ever tasted. Then I didn't drink anymore until, you know, I was a little bit older in school and it was time to impress somebody else, you know. Time to impress some of the kids I used to hang around with. We'll just go get a bottle of wine and we'll sneak out and we'll drink this bottle of wine. It tasted terrible. But with them, we had enough to drink a little more, you know. With my dad, it was just that beer, and I was one sip, and I was done. We had a little bit more, so I drank a little, forced a little bit more down. Eventually, it was, you know, eventually I got the effect, and that's what the doctor talks about in his the doctor's opinion in our big book. You know, it's. We drank essentially for the effect. I drank essentially for the effect. Once I got that first buzz, there was, you know, I lived to get that buzz. I pretty much, it changed the way I felt. It took away all my problems. And I know a lot of you guys can relate to this. It solved a lot of my problems. Even my physical problems. I mean, it just numbed all the pain. Somewhere around 5th or 6th grade is when I started drinking. I guess that's around 11 or 12, something like that. Maybe younger than that. It is younger than that, actually. I have a 15-year-old daughter now who's in high school. She's a sophomore. Definitely a blessing of this program. And a curse for being a dad. But anyway, I'm just kidding. So, you know, my drinking started to prove people, and then I finally got it. You know, when I drank enough, it hit me. It worked. So, anytime there was sneaking out at night, which I got to do a lot of that because with no parents around. When they're not around, it gives you the freedom to do what you want to do. And if you're like me, you got older brothers, then there's that older person that can get alcohol for you, that can get drugs for you, can test all this stuff out before you have to test it out. And that's just what they did. So if they were doing it, I was doing it. It was okay. Just a little family, you know. You know, so just, you know, a typical kid going through school, whenever he got a chance to do something that was fun, like get drunk and throw up, I mean, wasn't that great? Just, you know, spin around and get sick, and oh boy, that was a great time. We had, you know, we all got drunk and talked about it in school, and it was just, it's so, and it's great looking back on this stuff. It really is. And I'll throw in there too, it's a challenge seeing a little girl, but seeing a kid come up through the same thing and me being already through it, just scared to death. And it's just been a challenge. It's I don't know what it is, but I mean it's life. It's what it is. But being able to been through that, and now you get to take your own child through all that stuff is an experience that I'm glad I know what I know now. I'm truly grateful to know that, you know, that whatever happens, I'm going to be sober as long as I continue to do what I do. And I'll be there for anybody, not only my child, but anybody that is one of us and is looking for a solution. So let me move on here. I'm just being a kid, making good grades. You know, I'm a good student. I'm a good kid. I'm a people pleaser. You know, I'm fearful. You know, I hate bullies. I never could be one. That's why I hate them. I was lucky. I had older brothers. You know, I hung close to the older kids because that was protection for me. But I also did what they did too, before my time. So kind of went through grammar school, just, you know, little here, just testing the waters, and got to high school. You know, you're a big boy now. And about eighth grade, my parents divorced, so Dad was gone. And I say gone. He was still around, but it was a mean breakup. It was, hateful breakup. He cheated on her, and he didn't come out and tell her he did. She found out, and it was all downhill from there. But once he was gone, is my point, then I was able to do more of what I wanted to do. You know, not having a dad around on a daily basis, I have learned from my experience, as well as being a dad, gave me more freedom than I was ready for. And so I started staying out at night, even on school nights, sneaking out, shooting pool at a friend's house, drinking, you know, getting into smoking pot. Started doing some drugs, some LSDs, all of it. Just started testing all of that stuff. I remember kids in my high school caught, you know, the everyday occurrence to have the ambulance come to the high school. Everyday occurrence. Somebody ODing, you know, somebody passing out, somebody dying. And I was brought up too, also in all the segregation and the busing and stuff. So there was a lot of hatred going on there too. So naturally, it was kind of nice to have some way to escape. So got through high school. A little bit more about high school. I didn't go to the senior prom. I didn't go to dances. I went to parties. And I kind of picked up another addiction along the way. I learned to gamble. And I only say this because it's another addiction of mine, and I'll only say it once. But I'm a member of Gamblers Anonymous. Been in that program for 14 years. It's something I had to do. It's something that Alcoholics Anonymous got me to. It has done nothing but improve the quality of my life. And I say that only for anybody out there that knows anybody or even thinks they might have a problem. It's ruined a lot of people's lives, just like alcohol is. So I'm your contact there. Anytime, anywhere, you can call me and let me know there's somebody you would like to, that they want some help in that area. And that's all I'll say about that, because if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't be here, period. So I started, you know, hanging out, shooting pool, pitching quarters, drinking, you know, just everything but school. And I did get out of high school. I got out, ended up missing 40 days my senior year. Didn't even know if I was supposed to go to graduation, but I went anyway. You know, and the English teacher told me it's only because she liked me that I passed English. Or I wouldn't even been graduating. I wouldn't have had a cap and gown. I mean, I showed up like, I'm going, you know, I hope I'm graduating. So I just got out of there, and believe it or not, I had enough grades to, I didn't have enough grades. Kind of bringing up some of my alcoholic behavior. I had applied to Georgia Tech, and my SAT score was about 20 points short of what the entry. And most people know, even kids know, that you can take it over. You know, not me. The hell with you guys. You know, you don't know what you're losing here. You know, it's just amazing when I can look back at my life, how ego-driven, self-centered, pride, all those things just sent me into a cauldron of chaos. I mean, it was just, I created all my problems, most of my problems. So anyway, being the intelligent guy that I knew I was, I thought I'd take up a career as a professional bowler. Yeah. Now I'm talking 30 years ago, I think, 1977, 1980, in Atlanta, Georgia. It's probably two bowling alleys in the city. That's not a pro stop. The closest pro stop's in Miami somewhere. I mean, you know, obviously they took no thought into this because, you know, bowling was great up north, Chicago, New York, big time. It really was. But in Atlanta, Georgia, you know, it's kind of like soccer. If you want to be a soccer player back then, you know, you might find one, you'd make the team, but nobody come watch. So anyway, I did that though. I got my job in a bowling alley. I worked there about 3 years, and I spent a lot of my time drinking, doing dope, and hustling. I would get in these games of gambling and bowling, and I would play around. That's all I did for 3 years. Finally, I quit the bowling center somewhere about 22. I finally got a job. You know, I started listening to my dad a little bit, and you know, so you need to do something with your life, son, you know. And so I got into the printing industry as an apprentice, delivering, and I actually stayed in that area of business for quite a while, even till the day I got sober. So I picked up a trade, never went back to school, pursued my career in bowling, and my career as an alcoholic, as a drunk, as a drug addict. I had very little supervision. I was able to make just enough money to do what I wanted to do. And that was drink and gamble. I was drinking bowl. And I did this for over 10 years. And I just say, that's my story. I didn't vote. I didn't get involved in the church. I had two relationships. Neither one of them lasted more than a month. This is the time from 18 years old till I was 32, till I got in this program. I did very little at home. I was in and out of my mother's house three times. I probably stayed out at the longest period of time, maybe 9 months. But I was always back to mom's. You know, mom, can you take me? I can't afford this, can't afford that. And yet I never gave her any money for groceries. You know, I never did my part. Just a user, a taker. I had this mindset that I was going to be a professional bowler. You know, it's such a big lie. It really was. Because I might could have been. But if I could have stayed out of the bars, if I could have not been a drug addict, if I could have had the discipline to practice. I was too good for practice. I mean, most of the... I did actually tour the Southeastern PBA region for 2 years and had to file taxes because I made a little money. But my problem was I could not stay out of the bars. I went to Florida. I'm telling you, the last place you want to be in Florida is the bowling alley. It is. You know? There was... It just didn't... So I wasn't. I was only there to show up to play, and that was it. So, you know, in a nutshell, that was my career till I was 32 years old, and I hit my bottom. I hit my bottom by being on my second DUI. I hit my bottom. I had been in jail overnight. I was on my second DUI. I flipped a truck, went to the hospital. But for the grace of God, I wouldn't be here if a couple of little incidents didn't happen with that accident. The truck was actually, it was on my, it's hard to explain, but I had a truck, like, you know, it's like this, and it ended up on its side. And my head's out of the window like this. The truck's turned over on its side, and my body's inside. Now, how that happened, I don't know. I flew out of my head flew out, the door opened, then it shut back. And so, you know, if it goes like that, it just breaks my neck. And I'm sitting there for 20 minutes hoping somebody will show up, and the truck's just rocking like this. And I'm laying in there, my head's outside of the door. And like I said, it's hard to explain, but all that truck had to do is just, you know, I'm gone. So on the way... I did get out of that, and on the way, it's funny, on the way to the hospital, I was crying and everything, you know. I'm so glad you guys come and got me. Oh God, it was so bad. But I was crying. I had a spiritual experience. I did. I really believe I did. But needless to say, in a week, I was drinking again. You know, it wasn't enough. So I tell you a little bit about what got me here. I kind of leading up as my life got worse. And I really didn't have a whole lot going on between the time I got out of high school and the time I got sober. It was pretty much just like I said. You know, I got some family and stuff. And we would get together for Christmas. There was a few family get-togethers and stuff. But I pretty much drank as much as I could when I could. There'd be times where I would... go on the wagon 3 days, go on the wagon, you know, start running, and then, you know, it wouldn't last very long. But that was pretty much my story for all that time, and it seems like such a waste of my life, and it was. The truth is, it was. I did absolutely nothing, nothing for anybody else. I mean... Not very much. I didn't do much for my community, for my family, for me. And I had very few relationships. Very few. And I don't mean just women. I'm talking, I was lucky to have one, believe me. I was not fit for anybody. And I won't go into the two that I had because I don't, there's no way to keep it clean. So I was a couple DUIs, out of money, in debt, back at home again at mom's house. And I remember this. I remember it because it's funny. And Bill's story, he talks about looking out a window. And his wife asked him, "Why do you do it?" or something. And you know, I think it's in the movie, Bill W. And he's looking outside at all the people and stuff. And he just, you know, he just knows. He tells her he just never did fit in. You know, he's tried. He's just never did fit in. And And after all he's been through, after all he's been through, all they've been through, knowing what he knows already about drinking, about how much worse his life's got, she's ready to leave, how much he loves her. Knowing all of that, the thing he wants most is to take another drink. And that's where I was. That's exactly where I was when I was in my mother's kitchen looking out the window. And I walked over to our refrigerator. And on that refrigerator is a little metal sticker. You know, you stick all them things on the refrigerator. And it was a number to Ridgeview. And I swear I'd never call that number. I remember saying that. I remember maybe once in my drinking career that anybody even mentioned anything about alcoholism. We were all ignorant to alcoholism. I don't even remember the alcoholic coming up anywhere, you know. And especially with my mother being a nurse, but it just never came up. And I'm the only one in my family in recovery. So I called that number. Make a long story short, I called that number. They did me the little interview thing on the phone. We got insurance, how much money you got. I just it's a miracle I didn't hang up, because, you know, what am I calling for? So anyway, the guy said, well, we do have people who do some community service work twice a month. They're going to be out in your area in a week. I'm like, great. So I set an appointment with him, and I drank in between, but I went to see the guy. How I got there, I don't know. I just knew something was telling me I had to change. I didn't want to quit drinking. I didn't know anything about alcoholism, but I wanted some help, and I wasn't getting it from anybody I knew. So I went to see this guy, and he does the same thing. I mean, it was a quick interview. You know, you ain't got no insurance, you got no money, you ain't got a job. You know, we're a hospital, but, you know, you're not quite that bad yet. He said, maybe you ought to go to AA. That's what he said. And I go, God, I came here over here for this. AA? You mean Alcoholics Anonymous? You're kidding me. And that was it. He says, I got other people to see. And, you know, we can't help you. We can't help you. So, and I'll be honest, I really don't remember how I got the first meeting I got to, how I looked it up, or how I found it. It's probably just out of the phone book. But I went to my very first AA meeting at Decatur Hospital in Decatur. And I really believe, lucky for me, that first meeting, it was a speaker meeting. And that was God looking out for me, because if there was any kind of meeting where I had to share or do something, I would have not stayed. I was that afraid of people. I was that afraid of being there. And it was only out of desperation that I made it there. And the guy told his story. And the part I heard was he just got out of jail. The part I heard was he didn't want to go back to jail. And the part I knew, that I was sober enough to know, was that I was on my second DUI and I might have to go to jail. So maybe I better go to some AA meetings and it'll look good for the judge. And that's just what happened. I found some AA meetings closer to where I live, and that was the NABA Club. And it was the second meeting that got me, because the second meeting, people were laughing. They were laughing. They were telling stories. I could relate. I could hear. I was not comfortable, but nobody bothered me. You know, it was not like I stuck out. I mean, I'm sure I did, but they knew enough to let me in here and leave me alone. Because, number one, I heard it after 6 months sober. What are you so angry at? And I said, I'm not fucking angry. So needless to say, people didn't have a problem staying away from me. But I started going to meetings. And I went to meetings because it was close, it was convenient, and I was trying to put together a resume for the judge. You know, and it's just a miracle. It's just a miracle that I kept going, and I don't know how many I needed, but at some point, I didn't want to not go to meetings because I got involved. I started making coffee. I remember my very first meeting, my first meeting that I shared. I had to be 20-something days sober before I ever said anything. And one of the guys I was hanging with, he had 40 days maybe, and one other guy I was hanging with, I drank with, and you know, I just knew something was going on here. This is working, because if he was getting sober, my God, you know, something's going on here. I got to find out what it is. But when I'm suggesting that, you know, that I write it down on paper, what I wanted to share. I mean, I couldn't share. There's just too much going on in my head. And by the time that first person shared, I'd start thinking about I was already thinking what they were saying and what I should say. And then that other person that beat me to the punch, they'd raise their hand, they'd start sharing, and my head was, oh yeah, well, you know that too. And by that time, I was thinking about replying to what he said and that third person, but I never had a chance. I never had a chance to share because of me, because of my head. It was just nonstop. So anyway, he suggested I write it down on paper, write down something to share. And when that guy at the meeting says, has anybody got anything they want to talk about? You know, at the beginning of the meeting, and that's so cool because I raised my hand and I had that piece of paper in my hand. I said, I do. And I read off what I wrote the night before. And that was, people came up to me after the meeting telling me how good a meeting it was, and thanks to you, and I believed all that shit. And this is the truth, I didn't shut up. I kept on sharing. And about 2 months later, old timer says, you need to shut up and listen to me. Because I was telling y'all everything, you know, I just knew so much about all this going on here. When I was just, you know, it was just a miracle I was sober. So I went through two sponsors my first year. The first one, he's alive today, but he was a guy I used to drink with. And I was attracted to him because he was another guy I drank with who drank Grand Marnier in the mornings before we went to work. But he was shaken. He couldn't even, he had to have help to get that first drink. And I remember not laughing at him, but just, you know, talking about how thick he was. And this guy had 2 years sober when I got here. And that was, I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. And I just started hanging with him because I knew whatever was going on here, he knew about it. And he took me under his wings, and we got through the first 5 steps. And I know we're running out of time, but I just, some neat things happened my first year that, you know, when I went through those first 5 steps, I got to tell you, at the very end of that fifth step, you know, he had told me some things that he did after I told him some things that I did, and it was not a very thorough fourth step. I was pretty honest as I could be, and I was just trying to fit in. I was just doing because y'all did it. And after he shared some stuff, I told him, well, I got a couple other things I want to tell you. And I made up some stuff. Because it just wasn't bad enough, you know. I didn't do a lot of the things he did, and I'm not lying. I just made it up. And I just share that with you because, you know, working these steps, we hear, I mean, this program is laid out so perfectly. It's not perfection, it's progress, you know. I can tell you about perfectionism. You're looking at somebody that does laundry, and he has to take all his clothes off so he gets all the laundry done. You know? I mean, there's something wrong with that. So, there's, you know, the sooner you get started on these steps, the sooner you can go back through them. That's my experience. And I keep going back through these steps because I need it. You know, I'm a high maintenance recovered alcoholic. And if I'm left too much, if I'm left alone too long, I'm going to drink again. I am. I've not proven that to myself, but a lot of people have proven that to me. I don't have to go back out there. And I have thought about drinking before in my little tenure here so far. But it's only because I had no other solution. It's only because, and I think I would have drank if I thought I could get away with it. But you guys put in me that once you know the true nature of this disease, you'll never be the same again. And I heard it time and time again. They go back out and they don't work anymore because they're sitting there thinking about us in these rooms. If you're a real alcoholic, you know, it's going to mess up your drinking. I mean, I'd be messed up anyway. I don't want to make it any worse out there. If it ain't going to work, I'll just suffer in here. I mean, I really don't want to go back out there. I do believe that it's easier for me to stay sober than to have to get sober again. I don't want to do that again because it's just, but for the grace of the God of my understanding, that I stayed here long enough to get into these steps and start getting some of that stuff that was keeping me away from you guys, because there was a lot of it. I mean, there's still stuff today. It's a process. And it's a process that I have incorporated as a way of life. That means I do it every day. I have found for me that the more I work these steps, the more efficient I got at it. And by doing that, then I don't stay in the pain as long. By doing that, I realize that this is a 24-hour-a-day program. Those steps are there for me, all 12, for 24 hours. You know, I that's what I do. I've learned I can go through those 3 or 4 times a day, all 12 steps. You know, that's part of what step 10 tells us to do, is continue to do this stuff. And then continue to improve my conscious contact, and then continue to get out of myself and help others. And that's what I do. And if I and even when I do that, some days aren't so good. But something always happens within that 24 hours that tells me that you've done good because you didn't choose to drink. You know, that this you're going to be all right. You know, this program works. It's going to pass. It's going to change. You know, whatever. You're going to be fine. You don't have to drink anymore. It's just not. You just don't have to do it. And I don't. I really believe I don't. I got a great sponsor today. I always like to bring him up because he's just got a lot of discipline. And that's one thing I don't have. I work on it. But he's got brain cancer, and a lot of you guys know him. But you know, it's just amazing. It's just amazing that God's hooked me up with the people because this guy just carries on. And I bring that up just because I love him so much. I've I can do that to people today. I love a lot of the guys I sponsor. I love all you guys. You know, it's just a common bond that we have, and it's not so much the disease that's the solution. You know, it's the things we have to do to stay sober. You know, I have a lot of respect for every one of you guys here because you have a desire to stay sober. You want to be here, you know, and even if you don't want to be here, you know, I still have a lot of respect for the fact that you think you might need to be here, whether you want to be here or not. Let's see. I was going to read something. You know, I really wish I was a little more not so low key, but I'm working on that. I don't mean to put anybody to sleep. I could have done a little more research and come up with a better story tonight, but I don't know. I've just been kind of lazy lately. But I was bringing up my sponsor. Sponsorship's so important. I don't know why I'm bringing him up, to be honest. I just like the guy, and I know everybody's. he's in their prayers and stuff, but just to see somebody like that go through what he's going through, I mean, he knows, you know, his time is limited on it with his life, and once you get in here and get sober, life gets good. It really gets good. Even when it's bad, it's good. And I forget that. But, you know, he just carries on. He just carries on. He just continues to do what he's been doing since he got sober. Plus, he's got more girlfriends than I've seen any guy I have. I mean, you know, he's still my mentor, this guy. I don't know if there's a problem there or if it's something God's trying to tell me, you know. I mean, anyway, I'm not up here looking for a date. I'm just probably rambling more than I should be. Service is a big part of this program. I think service saved my life. It kept me sober long enough to get sober. You know, and then when I combine that with going through the steps and really really understanding the solution and the power of this program and, you know, really being efficient at carrying the messages, is when this really became a way of life for me. And it's a good way of life. It's a great way of life. I feel like we're the lucky ones. I really do, because everybody don't get this. They just don't get this opportunity. Now, there's many a pass to the God of our understanding. You know, you don't have to be an alcoholic to find HP. And there's a lot of people that aren't. And they have a great life. But the underlying thing is they have a higher power. You know, they do. And if it wasn't for this program, I wouldn't have one, because I just couldn't connect the dots. And this is just, you know, the more I read the 164 pages, the more it's the truth for me. It's everything in there. I can honestly say it's me. It's just me. So I'm going to end with this. I'll shut up. I'm kind of rambling on here, but I just picked it out. This is nothing. This is all, you know. Believe me, I'm not a philosopher here. But it's in helping others. And I just thought it was nice. And it's a good way to end this thing, because there's a lot of people out there that don't know there's a solution. There really is. And there's a lot of things I have to do in my sobriety that I don't want to do. And there's a lot of places I've been that somebody like me would never go. I used to go down to Atlanta Union Mission, and I was scared to death, but I went. I never got hurt. Nothing but good things happened. So anyway, there's this little paragraph. It says, "Your job now is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life, and these motives and God will keep you unharmed." So, thanks guys for letting me be up here.
Thank you, Terry. We're glad you came in and stayed for the miracle.